This is episode 160 of the Prepper Website Podcast. Today's articles are Best Handgun Calibers for Beginners, Shooting a Pistol for the First Time, and Stuff, Concerns on Over-Attachment or Attachments that Can Get You Killed. Hey, I'm Todd Sepulveda, the editor of PrepperWebsite.com. This podcast is an audible version with some commentary of articles that have been posted on Prepper Website, a daily curation of preparedness information. These articles are some of the best that have been recently posted on PrepperWebsite.com. All article links and show information can be found on the PrepperWebsitePodcast.com. Hey, this evening is kind of a late evening for me. We did go to the viewing. My sister-in-law's father passed away over the weekend, and so we did go to his viewing this evening. And that's tough, man. You know, that's tough to see people that you know and you care about that, you know, they're crying and upset because they're not going to be able to, you know, talk to their loved ones anymore. You know, they're not going to be able to, you know, share that holiday with them or just that that conversation over the phone. You know, my sister-in-law's twin brother, he just played a voicemail, you know, like the last voicemail. Apparently his dad would always call, you know, the kids. And he played this last voicemail, and so it was kind of heart-wrenching there. But, you know, there's a lot of people this evening that are kind of in the same predicament. You know, there's this idiot over in Las Vegas, you know, killed, I think it's up to 59 people now, and injured like 500, and I think it's, you know, there's a lot more than was previously reported, so it's in the 500s now for sure, and there's a lot of information there coming out, and a lot of it's not accurate, so, or at least there's so many different things out there. You know, ISIS wanted to claim that he was a follower, and really, that kind of proves how bad a shape they are. They're just trying to grab any kind of headline out there and trying to attach themselves to it. But, I mean, there's, you know, I've seen so many things throughout the day come out about this guy. He's had tannerite. He's had nitrate in his house was found. You know, so there was, you know, probably other bomb-making materials. I had heard that there was 10 firearms up with him in the hotel room. And then there was 19. Someone else said maybe 30. You know, there's like he was a billionaire or a millionaire because of real estate, and then, you know, Drudge Report right now saying video poker debts drove him mad, and so there's just so many different things out there. So you might want to hold off on you know, exactly you know, pinpointing why this guy would have done whatever he did. Apparently he was mad, and he killed a lot of people. You know, there's going to be a lot of opinions, especially in the preparedness community. People are going to start putting things out there. I've already seen like about three. I've seen two videos and one article already, and you know, today on this. People just, you know, giving their opinions and about, you know, what to do about preparedness and how to go about, you know, being prepared for situations like this. It was just crazy. It's just absolutely crazy. And we are living in a very crazy time, in a crazy world. All these things going on. And I know that there's a lot of people saying, what the heck, you know, is wrong with everybody? What's wrong with this world, right? That's one thing. You know, I used to read a lot of alternative news, and I've been going at this for a little while now, and it still amazes me how crazy things can get. And so, you know, one of the things that I had recently, I talked about John Haller's prophecy update. You know, many of you know that I am a pastor. I'm a Christian. I don't make any excuses for my faith, and talk openly about it. If you don't like it, you can go find another podcast, because I'm not gonna stop. But I talked about John Haller's prophecy update, and I used to post them on PrepperChurch.com, and just because of you know, finances and stuff, I let Prepper Church, the hosting for PrepperChurch.com, expire, and I still own the domain name. But I did want to continue doing the prophecy updates because I stopped for a while because it just after a while it just kind of seemed like it was just the same old, but you know, I think lately here things have been ramping up, and I've always listened to the prophecy updates. I just never put them in a big post where you can find them all very easily. So I did that again over at edthatmatters.com. I talked about that I was probably going to do this, so I went ahead and did that weekly watchman for October 1st. And I probably won't always post to everybody, but this time I have the prophecy update from John Haller, J.D. Farrakh, I have Jacob Prash's, and then Amir Sarfati's. And so you can go over to edthatmatters.com. I'm also going to link to it in the show notes and kind of, you know, get a biblical perspective. A lot of the times they're bringing out current events and, you know, how those things might apply to, you know, to prophecy, or just at least giving you a lot of current events, which is, you know, it's good to stay up to date on all the things that are going on. So, hey, I used to advertise a long time ago on Prepper website for a card game called Conflicted. Some of you might remember that, but it was a card-based scenario game where you could flip up. Yeah, every card had a scenario in it, and you could use that in a group, and just, you know, there's some good stuff there. But anyway, the makers of the card game went ahead and made a board game. They worked hard at it. I know that they've been working at it for a while. It took them a while to do it, but they did. And they put it on Kickstarter. And let me tell you, it's already kind of blown the doors off of Kickstarter. So a lot of people are interested in this one. You know, they were trying to reach $35,000, and they've already hit $56,000, and they still have 23 days to go on this Kickstarter. So I'm going to link to it if you're interested in a board game. You know, there's always different kind of board games out there, and you're always like, hey, I don't want the usual thing out there. But if you're interested in this one, I think for $60 you can get in on this one and get this game. It looks really interesting. There's some good trailers here that you might be interested in just watching. But I'm going to go ahead and link to that in the show notes, so you can go ahead and hit that. And then I'm going to link to the Conflicted card game if you're interested in looking into that. I'll have some more information for you on those card games a little bit later on in the week. You know, looking forward to sharing some of those things with you and some ideas that I have. But if you're interested in that, I'm going to have that in the show notes as well, where you can kind of go and check those out. You know, interesting stuff there. And I'll talk a little bit about ways that you can use that scenario card game a little bit later on. All right, so let's go ahead and get into our first article of the podcast. This one comes to us from gunbacker.com. I'm not sure if this is the first article that I am featuring on the podcast from Gunbacker, but I think so. But this is a good article. I know there's a lot of people that are coming to the podcast that are new, listening to the podcast, and they're interested in preparedness. Maybe they just kind of clicked on it from iTunes or whatever. Maybe you're new and you're like, hey, all these crazy, like I was talking about before, all these crazy things that are going on in the world, and maybe there are some things that I need to get prepared for. And so one of those things is to defend yourself, right? That's one of the main things that people look into, and they want to find ways to defend themselves. And so this is kind of like an entry-level understanding of calibers, of gun calibers, and there's a lot of links here that you'll want to check out as well. So let's go ahead and read this one. It's called Best Handgun Calibers for Beginners Shooting a Pistol for the First Time. So let's start reading this one. For a new shooter, buying their first handgun can be an intimidating experience. What brand, what style, revolver or semi-auto, and most of all, what caliber? Most people jump straight into picking out their favorite handgun without thinking about what caliber it is. Caliber choice is critical for new shooters. Too much gun can be a handful, too little, and you might be undergunned. Beginners looking for a firearm need to identify what they intend the gun to do. For example, a new shooter may desire a firearm that is suitable for self-defense. A self-defense caliber has certain criteria to meet. A shooter looking for a fun range gun has some different criteria to meet. We are going to first look at the best calibers for beginners and then provide you with a few examples of popular handguns in each caliber that you should consider when you are first starting out. Traits of beginner cartridges. In general, beginners should stick to commonly available, well-reputed handgun calibers. Magnum rounds are often too much of a handful for new shooters, and oddballs are often expensive and hard to find. Commonality and affordability are very desirable traits for a caliber to have. If you cannot afford to shoot the caliber regularly, the skills you build will deteriorate. This goes the same for trying to find ammunition in odd calibers. Rounds like the 32 long are still out there, but they can't be found in most big box stores. The round should be relatively low recoil. Beginning with powerful, heavy recoiling rounds can actually cause training scars. Training scars are poor habits gathered from poor training and practice. Magnum calibers in the hands of beginners tend to create an exaggerated and noticeable flinch that pulls a shot off target. Starting with a smaller, lower recoiling caliber and working up to larger calibers is the best way to go. Magnum calibers for beginners are also genuinely unsafe. There has been tragic accidents in the past where an individual lost control of the firearm and harmed themselves or another. Firearm selection is another important thing to remember when choosing your first caliber. If a shooter likes a certain caliber, they need to ensure that caliber is in a firearm type they want. For example, the 10mm is a great round, but few production guns chamber it compared to the 9mm. The four great beginner calibers. While there are a number of different caliber choices out there, we are going to focus on four of the great American stalwarts of anyone just starting out. We highly recommend starting off with a 22 handgun of some type if you are brand new to shooting. The ammunition is cheaper and you won't have to deal with recoil when you are first starting out. If you are brand new to firearms and hop out on the range with your shiny new 1911, you might just decide not to come back and after you feel the power of a 45 caliber handgun offers. We'd also recommend that you look at a handgun with a metal frame instead of a polymer frame if you are nervous about any type of recoil. Let's look at each caliber in detail and then we will give you a few different handguns to check out that we feel are a good fit for anyone that's just starting out. Number one is the 22 long rifle. It's a safe choice. The 22 long rifle round is a classic of American firearms. It is a tiny rimfire round chambered in the anemic 22 caliber. The 22 long rifle is probably the most popular round in the world if you judged it on a per round sold basis. At only an inch long, the rounds are often sold in bulk. You can commonly purchase 22 long rifle bricks of 500 rounds for around $30. This makes it a very affordable round that can be purchased and fired in bulk while not killing the wallet. The round is common enough that any gun store in the United States will carry it. The same goes for big box stores that sell firearms. 22 long rifle is so highly desired and so common, it's one of the easier rounds to locate. When it comes to recoil, the 22 long rifle is probably one of the easiest recoiling rounds out there. There is almost no recoil in your average sized handgun, just a gentle push that lets you know you fired it. In the smallest of guns, like Derringers, the recoil is still minimal and comfortable to fire over and over. The 22 long rifle is the perfect training caliber for shooters looking mainly to target practice and plink. It is not the best choice for a defensive round. It's simply too small and does not reliably penetrate deep enough to always strike something vital. As a target round, it excels in accuracy and beginners can shoot quite a bit of affordability to practice and become proficient with their firearm. Speaking of firearm, the selection for handguns in 22 long rifle is expansive. New shooters can find revolvers, automatics, Derringers, and even bolt-action 22 long rifle pistols. The round is so popular, people make a wide variety of firearms in the caliber. New shooters can keep cowboy-style revolvers or 22 long rifle versions of the most popular automatic pistols. The 22 long rifle is the best round for beginners who are children or who are recoil-sensitive and scared of the loud concussion most handguns create. The best 22 pistols for beginners are Ruger SR22, and the Walther P22, or any of the pistols covered in our roundup here. So like I said, there's a lot of links here that you can click on. I mean, there's a lot of things I want to say here that I'm thinking of that I'm as I'm reading here, but I'm going to try to save it for the end. The second round is the 9mm, and now you're moving up in the world. The 9mm round has experienced a resurgence in the last 2 or 3 years. With ammunition technology constantly changing and evolving, the 9mm projectile has become more effective and more popular. The 9mm round is the current choice of the United States military and NATO as a whole. 9mm ammunition is very common and extremely popular. It's used by police, military, concealed carriers, competition shooters, and recreational plinkers. 9mm ammunition can be found in any self-respecting gun store and big box store. Buying online in bulk is often the cheaper method, but does require a significant initial investment. Buying bulk can often reduce the price per round to an affordable 17 cents. 9mm ammunition comes in a wide variety of different loads and styles. A shooter can purchase affordable and common 150-grain full metal jacket loads for practice, or choose the heavier 124, 135, or even 147-grain rounds for a variety of different purposes. For example, the 147-grain loads are often subsonic and perfect for suppressor use. The 9mm round is an excellent round for both defensive use and plinking. Its affordability makes it a great choice for simple target shooting. There is more recoil than the .22 long rifle, but it's far from harsh or punishing. The recoil is controllable in full-sized weapons, compact weapons, and even subcompacts. Shooters will not run into recoil issues until they go to smaller, super small pocket pistols. Even then, the recoil is controllable, just a bit snappy. The 9mm is a great caliber that creates an advantage in terms of versatility. A single pistol can be used for target practice and plinking, concealed carry, and general self-defense, and even some competitions. The 9mm is a very versatile round. It's easy to shoot and quite capable when paired with the correct ammo. Firearm selection is also very broad for this caliber and includes automatic and revolvers. The caliber is mainly found in automatics and can be found in close to any configuration a shooter desires. The 9mm pistols to check out as a beginner: the Glock 17, the CZ-75B, the Ruger SR9, and any of the pistols we cover in our 9mm write-up here. The third round, or third caliber, is a 38 Special. It's less popular, but it's fun. The 38 Special is probably one of the oldest active rounds still commonly used for self-defense. The 38 Special is a classic revolver cartridge that's been around for generation after generation. 38 Special is typically a revolver caliber and a good choice for anyone looking for a modern six gun. There are at least two automatics that can chamber and fire the 38 Special, but it is mainly used in revolvers. The 38 Special is the round used for small revolvers designed for concealed carry. The 38 Special is well known and well respected for its features. These features include a relatively low recoil even when fired from a small snub nose revolver. Snub nose revolvers and 38 Special give users a compact weapon in a full powered cartridge. In an automatic, the same size auto would likely be in the weaker 380 ACP. The 38 Special isn't just isolated to snub nose revolvers though. There are several full size revolvers that shoot the 38 Special. For those who prefer a wheel gun over an automatic, a 38 Special with a 3 or 4 inch barrel is an absolute blast to shoot. The round is accurate and performs well as a defensive round. It also has a very mild recoil that is pleasant and hardly any muzzle rise. Since most 38 Specials are revolvers, you can purchase reduced recoil ammo that will not cause functional issues with the revolver. Top 38 Specials to check out as a beginner: the Rossi 352 and the Smith & Wesson 38. The fourth caliber is the 45 ACP, an American classic. The 45 ACP is a classic American round. Designed for the legendary 1911 automatic pistol, the 45 ACP has served the United States for over 100 years. It was the standard military issue handgun cartridge for over 70 years and is still an American favorite. You can check out our 1911 holster write-up we did right here. The 45 ACP is a bigger round that does have the highest level of recoil on the list. However, the recoil impulse from the 45 ACP is not harsh or painful in any way. It is often described as more of a slow push than a snappy kick. The 45 ACP is good for beginners looking for a bigger bullet, Beginners who start with the 22 long rifle may decide to move up to a new caliber, and the 45 ACP is an excellent choice in that situation. Since the round has been around for so long, there are tons and tons of pistols chambered in it. The classic 1911 is just one of the hundreds of 45 ACP pistols out there. The classic round has attracted almost all major manufacturers to create a 45 ACP handgun. The 45 ACP is an excellent choice if you are a beginner looking to acquire a suppressor. The common and cheap 45 ACP 230 grain ball round is naturally subsonic. Other calibers have subsonic rounds, but they are often hard to find or pricey. This makes it a very quiet round out of a suppressor since there is no supersonic crack. The 45 ACP is also an excellent choice for individuals who have an affection for classic firearms. The 45 ACP is an American institution, and it often attracts new shooters for good reason. Top 45 pistols for beginners, any type of 1911, preferably an American-made model or Sig Sauer. Beginners beware. Choosing a caliber is often more important than choosing an exact firearm. While we've given you some pointers on which handguns are some of our favorites in each particular caliber, people often try to choose the gun before they choose the caliber, which is a recipe for disaster. Proper caliber choice sets beginners up for success and as a starting point for a long-term hobby. Remember, pick a caliber that's common, affordable, easy to handle, and fits your desired needs. All right, so I think this is a good article that kind of explains a lot and sets a lot of things out and also opens it up for a little bit of discussion here. One of the things that I've talked about this before is, working in elementary schools, there's a lot of women there who went and got their concealed handgun license or went and got pistols. Maybe their fathers took them or their husbands took them. And they went to the store. They went to the sporting goods store. And they found a pistol that felt good in their hand. And, it looked pretty. It was nice and shiny and whatever. Maybe it had pink, pink on there somewhere along the line or purple or whatever. And they went to the range to shoot it. And it recoiled so much that it scared the crap out of them. So I know a lot of that happened with the 380, the 380s, the small little 380s, because women have smaller hands, and it just felt right. But the problem was, and a lot of this happened a lot of times, I'm trying to say, is that they went to the range, they shot it, and they never went back again. They just never wanted to shoot it again. They never cared about it because it was kind of like what this article says. It was painful. It was kind of harsh, the recoil for them. And so no one really walked them through. Sometimes people with sporting goods, you will run into some good people who know their stuff and will actually talk you through. And when you find those people, get to know those people and spend some time with them, and you want to come back and give them your business. But a lot of the times, they're just there and they're selling, and they're going to sell you, what you're interested in. And so you need to think about this. So if you are in the market for or you're getting into firearms, you really need to start out just exactly like what this article was saying, is shooting a 22. Because if you've never, ever shot before, go with someone. Find someone who is maybe one of your friends. If you're a woman who's listening, I know there's a lot of women out there listening to the podcast. If you are a woman and you're new to preparedness or you're new to firearms, maybe you have a friend who, a girlfriend or a family member who's into firearms, who you could talk to, and they would take you to the range so that you can shoot. You can start to shoot from, do the 22 and then go from the 22 to the 9mm and at least go there, right? And so you want to start off in that way. One of the things that I would also recommend doing, and if you wanted to go to the sporting goods store and start, maybe handle some guns and get the feel for some guns. Don't just go for the nice, shiny, pretty ones. Don't just go for the ones that fit exactly, that just are small and feel like, okay, this would be perfect for my purse or, for my pocket or whatever it might be. Get a feel for it and then go to a shooting range that will allow you to choose some different pistols and go to, you know, go out there. And actually, there's a lot of the times you can pay for some training and just, you know, tell the person at the range, like, hey, I'm new to firearms. I'm trying to find a good pistol that, you know, would meet my needs. Is there, you know, can I pay someone to go with me to the firing range and so I can get a little bit of experience and walk me through what I need to do and how to hold the pistol and blah, 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 and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, it'll be a little bit of money up front, but I think it will be worth it because you'll have a better experience. You'll have you'll be better informed of what you what you want to look for, because you might find that the 22 you just kind of want to work up to it. And so you get the 22 and you go to the range for a while and you get very, very comfortable. You become a really good shot with that 22, and then you know, after a while, you bump up to a 9mm. It might be where you're there and you start shooting the 22 and you feel very comfortable with that. And then somebody at the range might say, hey, you know, try my 9mm. And then you try the 9mm and you feel very comfortable with that as well. But you're able to work yourself up. So just a little bit of advice there if you're out buying a new firearm. Or if you're new to firearms and you're looking to purchase one for self-defense or whatever, we don't want to neglect also talking about shotguns if you're really looking for self-defense and maybe at home, there's definitely, shotgun, you should look into that as well. But on the pistol thing, you really do want to, if you're new to it, you want to kind of work yourself up. There are a lot of, I love what he said about the 9mm, that it is just one of those rounds that it's so common. It's so common out there. A lot of people are using it. And there is something to be said for that, to be able to, there's a lot of collectors out there. And so they have firearms and all different kind of calibers and stuff. And they're not really thinking about the actual defense aspect of it. For them, it's more of the love of collecting and those kinds of things. But if you're talking about maybe you are trying to have a firearm for your whole family, right? And you're trying to build up some kind of, you're trying to have a whole range of pistols so that maybe everybody, if you're thinking the poop hits the fan one day, you have enough pistols for every person or whatever, it would be smart to have those all chambered in 9mm, so then you can share ammo across the way. It'd be even smarter to have them to where you could even share magazines and stuff like that, but that's a whole another topic. But you have that aspect of it. Now, 9mm ammo, and I'm not an expert, and so I don't want to really go into this much. I'm just talking about articles that I've read, and but there's a lot of they've made a lot of inroads with defensive ammo. So you have your ball ammo that he was talking about here, that you go out and you can plink with, or you can just go to the shooting range and kind of shoot, and it's inexpensive. And then they have, and then you can also get hollow point. It's a little bit more, it's a step up, a little bit more expensive, but you have that hollow point. So it's you could consider that as a defensive round. But then you have rounds out there that are just for, they're like, hey, these are defensive rounds. And they're going to be a lot more expensive, but those are the ones that you want to have in your firearm if you are concealed carrying. And, if you ever get into a situation where you need to protect yourself, that's the ammo that you want to have in there. So you might have that in your pistol, and then you go to the range, you take that out, you put in the cheap ammo, you practice with that, and then you put the defensive ammo back in there. And so what I was trying to say is the 9mm has come a long way in the defensive ammo category there. And a lot of things to consider. And then of course you got the 38 and the 45. My dad used to have a great 1911 that he sold when I was a kid. I just kicked myself for that because it's just a really nice Colt 1911. And so I missed that gun. I got to shoot it a little bit when I was younger. One of the things about 22, and he talked about the boxes here, where you can buy the bricks, the 500. I know that was really easy. They were really easy to find a while back, and I think you're starting to find them a little bit more easily now. But back in the day, when the ammo shortage, when all that, and if you're new to preparedness, you probably wouldn't remember this, or you wouldn't know this. But at one point back in the day when there was the talk of gun control and all that kind of stuff, you couldn't find ammo. It was flying off the shelf. And I remember going and buying some last boxes of ammo that was, on the shelf, and it was crazy. I mean, people were standing in line for one box where normally you would walk in and buy three or four boxes and then walk out. And then 22, you couldn't find 22 at all. It was completely gone. And you were in the past where you would see bricks and bricks and bricks of all different, brand names. You couldn't find any of it. All you could find were like 25 round boxes of 22. And then even at that, they were limiting that. So I think it's getting a little bit better. The $30 a box or for the brick. I mean, I remember when it was a lot cheaper than that, right? And so it's getting a little bit better. But one of the things I wanted to bring up is with this the shooting in Las Vegas. Of course, we don't even know anything about anything, right? There's no for sure facts. And the Democrats in D.C. are already talking about gun control. And so when those kinds of things, I think I read on one of the news channels that firearm stocks were like shot through the roof today, because all the time something like this happens, gun control starts being talked about, and then people start panicking, and then when people start panicking they start going out and purchasing purchasing all the ammo and all the guns and whatever. And so something to consider, I guess, if you are in a situation where maybe you're running low in one of your calibers, you might want to just kind of, make a run to the store and maybe pick up a box or two. I think with our current administration, I don't think that that's going to get very far, the gun control aspect of it. But you never know, because these people are absolutely crazy that just flying off the handle. And of course, the media, will push that narrative as well. So, a lot of things to consider there when you're talking about firearms and those kinds of things. You're always going to hear people say, go get training. If you can get training, get some training. Go out there and shoot your firearm. Learn how to clean it. I was going to say all the popular firearms, but almost every type of firearm, you can go on YouTube and just type it in and you're going to find it. And there'll be somebody that will walk you through how to clean your firearm. And so you don't have to, follow instructions in a book or something like that. You can follow the instructions on YouTube. So this is a great article. There's a lot of links. If you're interested, you can go check out the guns that they are recommending, or the pistols that they're recommending in the various calibers. And that's gunbacker.com. Again, I'm going to link to that in the show notes like I always do. All right, so this next article comes to us from shtfschool.com. This is the website that houses like Selko's, and I've talked about him before, Selko's articles, and he writes. He was one of those that experienced a true SHTF situation in the Bosnian War, and was surrounded, he was in Sarajevo when it was surrounded, and just talks about some really crazy things that happened in his time there. And so I think this is, when he always posts an article, I want to get to it. I want to be able to post it on Prepper website, but I also want to read it on the podcast too. Because I think it's very, very interesting. A lot of the times when I'm reading articles, I sometimes self-correct what I'm reading. If there's like a correction I need to make, when I read Selko's articles, because he is, he's writing, English is not his native tongue, I do try to read the article like it's written. And so there's broken English sometimes, and just to kind of give you a feel. Maybe that feel for someone that's not English speaking, that they're actually writing this. I entitled it Attachments That Can Get You Killed on the podcast, just because I didn't like the title of stuff concerns on over attachment. I thought that was a little bit better title after you you listened to this article and what it's saying. So I'm going to go ahead and get into this one and start reading this one. It has some good stuff. Again, but remember, I'm going to read it exactly like it is written. All right. In one comment on my previous article, I received an excellent comment, thanks Nick, about what lessons he learned while going through Hurricane Irma and how that event changed some of his views about prepping. He got the point that I wrote about for a long time ago, and I still repeat it from time to time. It has to be repeated because you see it as my words only, and most of the people will understand it only in the proper way after they experience some serious event. Only then you can put it in correct perspective. Nothing like real-life experience learning. And there is nothing wrong about changing your survival system. I do that too when I figure that something works better than plane or equipment, works better than plan or equipment that I have. If you are a prepper for years and you did not change your setup and plan from day one of your prepping until now, then usually something is wrong with your philosophy. Only a good day I can. I think it was on some forum or in some blog comments, discussion was about some particular weapon, as far as I remember, and some guy said, like, when SHTF, on a good day, I can shoot or kill. In that short statement, on a good day, is condensed one of the biggest mistakes about prepping and survival movement. There is not too many good days when SHTF. It is simple like that. In short, people are prepping based on imaginary perspective, how SHTF gonna look, and that alone is not problem. You do not necessarily have to go through serious SHTF event in order to be good prepper survivalist. Problem is that people stick so hard to their imaginary perspective of how SHTF gonna look like and what they need for it that they are simply not willing to change their plans. They are sure. Whenever I read that someone changed his plans based on his experience and thinking and that he recognized that in my articles or courses where he was wrong, I feel great. By the way, on a good day, you can sit down and shoot 6 magazines from AK in 5 minutes and shoot 5 people who want to break in your home while you are singing Hey Joe without too much problems. You are fed, secured, comfortable, warm, healthy. Probably police gonna come in 10 minutes. You'll get professional psychological help later. Maybe you end up in local newspaper as a hero. On an ordinary day during real collapse, chances are that you'll be tired from days and nights of not sleeping well, more or less hungry. Maybe you're gonna have weird and painful infection in your groin from lack of proper hygiene and serious case of diarrhea. Your younger kid having pneumonia, and of course, doctors are gone, and your friend who is a veterinarian gave you some pills and you are not sure is it working. Your wife had nervous breakdown and you do not have clue what to do with her. You were listening to screams from towns for weeks while gangs were killing and raping, and your bones melted from horror. Several times, strange ideas of killing your family and then yourself struck your mind, because listening to screams for weeks put pictures of what kind of things are happening there, and you cannot cope with that picture. And then there are 5 people attacking your home. They even yell that they're going to spare all of you if you give them all your preps. But you're thinking about screams, but still, maybe they spare you. It is definitely not your good day. You need to hope for good days when SHTF, but you need to be prepared for bad days when SHTF. Heat. It is an equation that takes into consideration your skills, preps, event, circumstances, and given heat, or SHTF. If you show me man who can have all prepared perfectly well for any kind of possible scenario, I will bow to him, but in my mind it is simply impossible. If you understand then you'll understand 2 things. You'll need constantly to adapt to the given situation. You'll have bad days and fails, but you'll have a good chance to survive. To show that in an example, I'll use very widespread and popular topic, bug out bags. It is something like holy grail of survival, and it is like a minefield to go into that topic against widespread and popular opinions in survival community. but I'll survive and you just need to think about it. So here goes. Bug out bag and equipment. Bug out bag is something that is considered you absolutely need to have, or otherwise you are not a prepper. So there you have situation where people or family have bug out bags. Each member of family have his own bob. Yours might weigh 25 kilos. You have everything there. Food for 3 days, toilet paper, axe and knife, tarp and small stove, extra ammo, first aid kit, and lots of antibiotics. You have maps and radios. It is heavy-duty military-grade backpack, waterproof. All members of your family have bob with good and useful stuff inside. And then city erupted violent protest for whatever reason and you need to bug out immediately. You all grab your bobs, go out and get shot after 300 meters just because you have such good and cool looking stuff on you and in huge amounts. Or simply you drown in the river because your backpack is too big. I understand that this example is very rudimentary, but you need to stop thinking that you can cover everything for every scenario, otherwise you end up covering nothing. Bob has become almost burdened because we are being bombarded with info. What we really need to have in order to survive and thrive, or you must have this or otherwise you end up dead for sure. But it really needs to be about necessity, not comfort. There is prepackaged first aid kit for your bob with nonsense inside. There are stoves that are heavy and give your position away to everybody from 2 kilometer distance. There are ways to start your fire that takes like half hour to start fire and require like 1,000 calories of your work. Does anyone use lighter anymore for starting fire? What if lighter fails? Can you have 2 or 3 lighters for that case? There are powerful torches that make night look like day for only such and such amount of money. And if I want to read my map in the middle of nowhere using that torch, I'll be blind for next half hour. But if there's anybody with 3 kilometers of my position, they all will know where I am. Again, all above are examples, and torch, lamp, and flints are great stuff, and definitely they have its place. I have it. But did you think to include lighters and micro lights too? Example of solution would be shelf system. You need to have lots of stuff ready to take really quickly, but based on given scenario. Some things can cover all scenarios, basic things. But why in the name of everything covered anybody would drag big heavy bag when you need speed and blending? Is having sport bag for a given scenario not make more sense than a camping backpack or military type backpack? Is carrying rifle in your hand having more sense than hiding under coat in given moment and scenario? Maybe simple sleeping mat being visible on your backpack clearly points you as a target in given moment. Maybe moment demand only heavy-duty trash bag in your pocket as a means for sleeping on a way to your bug-out location. These are only examples, but hopefully you get my point. Sit down, pull all your gear out, and think about 5 possible SHTF scenarios, and that you have 10 minutes to choose only 30% of your bob stuff. See the difference in equipment selection for each scenario. It is good practice. It is reality. You cannot have everything. Find the balance. You may find that at the end it is about balance, how much preps you have in your home or willing to carry with you. Sometimes it affects your mobility and adaptability. Sometimes you grow huge connection with your stuff and you are not willing to leave everything and run to save your life because you have valuable things. Sometimes all your cool preps will save your life. Metal container with $300 worth of preps inside that you took and bury in woods as your secret stash can worth more than $50,000 worth of preps inside your home simply because you may maybe have to leave your home in 10 minutes in order to survive. It is balance that cannot be taught because you need to put it in perspective of your given circumstances. There is no magical solution to survive and thrive when SHTF. For only $99.99, there is no prepackaged perfect solution products. You need to pack your solution. All right. So there are some comments here, long comments that people have left here at SHTF School on this article. And I think it's very well said. I think you need to be able to be flexible and you need to be able to think through scenarios. And so one of those things, you know, in education as a teacher, one of the things we talk about is this idea of schema. And schema is your background knowledge and allows you to build upon knowledge that you have. So for example, if there are some students, which it's very, very sad, right? We live in Houston and the Gulf Coast, Galveston is 50 miles away. But there are times, and we've had science lessons, where we talk about the sand and we talk about the oceans and we talk about the tides. Well, students that have gone to Galveston and have sit down, you know, on the sat down on the sand, and they made a sand castle, and then over time they saw the tides come in, and at the beginning when they started making their castle, they were far away from the water. But then as the day kind of progressed, the water got closer, and eventually it just kind of wiped out their sandcastle. They had an idea of, hey, the tides move in and they move out. And or they might ask their parents, hey, what the heck? What happened? You know? And so the parents can explain, hey, you have high tide, you have low tide, you have these kinds of things, and so they can see it for themselves. So when you go into, so if a student has had that experience, and then they go into a science lesson, and the teacher is talking about moon phases, and they're talking about the gravitational pull of the moon, and how the moon creates low tide and high tide, and all this kind of stuff. They're able to think back on those times when they were at Galveston, and they saw that, and so they were able to build now on that schema, because they were able to see it and touch it, and they had some kind of knowledge with it. But other students who had never been to Galveston, and you know, at one point I was a fourth grade teacher. I had students that were in fourth grade who'd never been to Galveston. I'm very, very sad. And so you're trying to help them to understand that, and they're just going off of book knowledge. Now, book knowledge is better than nothing, right? But you want to be able to continue to build upon what you know. So learning in scenarios and skills, and the more you know, the more you're able to build upon what you're able to do when you're in a situation like that. The more you practice, the more we read the article from Gray Wolf, from Scott over at graywolf.com, graywolfsurvival.com yesterday, about wargaming, your scenarios. The more you do that, the more skills you acquire, the more information you have. You might do this one time and you realize, you know what, I can do this better this other way. And so, that's another skill, that's another adaptation that you can have to your skills and to your scenarios, and you're able to be flexible. And so, that's one thing that he's talking about here, is you need to be able to be flexible, that you're not so attached to your things. You're able to move beyond those things. You're able to realize that your life is more important than some of the things that you're holding on to. And I love that idea of, you need to look at your scenario. And he talked about, I don't know if you really got that here, because I've read this through a couple of times. But you talked about that shelf system, and basically, what he's talking about is, you have this survival situation. You have this survival gear, basically. And so, depending on the situation that you're in, you're able to throw that stuff in your pack, whatever is most valuable, right? And so you're not creating this big old backpack of or this big old bug out bag of all kinds of gear that you're not going to be able to make it anyway, right? Because it's so heavy and you're just not used to it. So a lot of good stuff here to think about and to consider with it. I love the idea of finding the balance. You got to find the balance between gear and skill. You don't want to run out to the woods with nothing. There are some people that can actually do that. There's a guy that I linked to, Primitive Skills. This guy does some great, he posts videos, but I mean, he does great stuff with just nothing. I mean, just so primitive. But that's very, very rare. I mean, your average person is not going to do that. I would say even your average bushcraft person is not going to do what this one guy does. He creates axes from just, from stones, and it's just amazing the things that he does. So, you know, you got to be able to, you know, think through what you're really capable of doing and add to that and build upon that and go from there. So good information here. Go check out this article. Maybe read it through a little bit more slowly than I read it, and check out some of the comments over here in this article and see where people are coming from and get some more ideas to add to that. But I think one of the big deals in when we're talking about being prepared is being flexible. That is a big, big skill, especially in today's world where we're in, being flexible, being able to adapt, being able to move around situations. I think that's a very, very important skill that we don't always talk about. All right, guys, thanks so much for hanging with me on this podcast. I really do appreciate you. If you get a chance, I'd love to get some feedback on what you thought about this SHTF school article. Do you think that I should try to read it, try to maybe correct some of the wording and try to do that on the fly? Or do you think I should continue reading it the way, it was written, and you kind of get that feel for the fact that it was written by someone else who is not a native English language speaker? And so I'll be curious on what you think about that, because, you know, we do link to Selco's articles and I do read them from time to time on the podcast. So you can come over to episode 160 and drop me a line there, a comment there, and let me know what you think about that. Hey, if you get a chance, I'd love to connect with you on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And don't forget to hit up the Facebook group. Love to have you there as well. Hey, with that, choose to live a more self-reliant life. Choose not to be so dependent on the government, grid, or the grind. Until tomorrow, stay prepped and aware. Peace.